It's my great pleasure to introduce Frank Darabian. I hope I pronounced it correctly. Frank got a PhD from Stanford University. His advisor was Lenny Susskind, but he mostly worked with, I think, Steve Schenker. And he did great work on random matrix theory and so on. And then he moved to Caltech and he continued to do great researches at the interface between quantum information theory and quantum gravity. So today he will tell us about complexity and also gravity in the lab. So please.
Great. Thank you, Benny, for the introduction and for this opportunity to visit PI virtually. And today I will talk about, try to cover two papers that I co-authors and in the past couple of years. And I think those are like interesting results that I hope you guys will find interesting and will provoke some interesting discussion. So the first one will be about the complexity of the evaporating black hole and the specific feature in geometry we call Python's lunch. And the second part of the talk will be about this new direction, kind of a theme of work called quantum gravity in the lab, where we ask questions about quantum gravity in the context of holography, when holographic systems can be simulated in a near-term quantum devices. All right. The overview of the part, since some of the members here are very familiar with holography, others not so much, I decided to have an introductory part on the connections between, like, remarkable links between holography and quantum gravity and quantum information theory, the insights from quantum information theory that have shed light on very deep puzzles of the quantum gravity. And parts two and three will focus on two separate papers that I co-authored with the following excellent collaborators. The first one is the as I mentioned, geometric obstructions to decoding Hawking radiation, and this like a funny construct in the geometry we call Python's lunch. And part three will purely focus on this teleportation protocol that was inspired by a traversable wormholes in the holography that turn out to be a very interesting protocol on the boundary side that can go beyond holographic applications. And this will be under this theme of quantum gravity in the lab. And the second is like a sequel of two papers that has appeared. Good, so let's start with the part one, the introduction to holography and quantum information. So holographic duality is one of the biggest accomplishments, I think, in the theoretical physics for the past three decades, and has really attracted a lot of interesting scientists, and a lot of fascinating research was done. And it was kickstarted by this result of Maldacena from 1997, where he illustrated that the theory with the gravity in anti-de-Sitter spacetime, which is a negatively curved space that has a boundary. There's like the laws of gravity, Einstein gravity, govern this ADS space, that this space is dual, the physics of it is a dual to a purely theory of pure quantum mechanics without any gravitational physics, living in a flat, like Minkowski spacetime in one less dimension. And that quantum theory lived in the boundary of this gravitational physics. So the insight was that everything that happened in this deep plus one dimensional space could be described and characterized just purely from the dynamics of a quantum mechanics of the boundary. This was really a remarkable finding, and a lot of other examples of holography have been proposed since then. Some results are mathematically very rigorous, others are somewhat puzzling and still being explored very actively in the community. But I think this insight of holography and as a powerful tool for investigation was really important, and created a new way of thinking about a new approach to thinking about quantum gravity. And some of the more recent, actually, direction that this holographic physics community took on is the connection between the quantum information and quantum computation features of the boundary theory that seem to be extremely important for understanding gravity and quantum gravity. And the first result in this direction came from Ryo Takayanagi paper from 2006, where authors more evidence was provided, and in the certain Exitoi models, a proof was given that the entanglement entropy of the region in the boundary, that is a quantum information quantity, that's we're talking about von Neumann entropy of a subregion in the quantum system, was equal to the area of the minimal surface, a surface that lived in the gravitational physics in the ADS space. And this was a connection between a purely geometric object, that was the area of the surface, and an information theoretic, in fact, quantum information theoretic object in the boundary. And further, the covariant version of this idea was developed later on, that was independent of the choice of the spatial slice, as well as generalized entanglement that Ryo Takayanagi was proposed, where there could be degrees of freedom, quantum degrees of freedom, like fields living in the bulk space that had the gravity in ADS space. And this would modify simply the relationship that the entanglement entropy of the boundary would have the minimal area part, as well as the entanglement entropy of the bulk fields. And a lot of work also was done in actually proving this relationship for various toy models, and evidence was collected. So this was one of the most remarkable links between holography and gravity and quantum information. Another remarkable connection was this error correction link, and that was initially proposed in this HAPI paper that Benny was one of the co-authors along with Harlow, Preskill, and Pastowski in 2015. And the authors of this paper actually suggested another very interesting connection. And the connection is between, if we have a fixed time slice of the ADS space, and this is some spatial slice, space-like surface, it was conjectured that this map from the bulk degrees of freedom to a boundary degrees of freedom is very similar to the error correction code. And a specific toy model of an error correction code was proposed, known as a HAPI code, but other models were later discussed and investigated, including a random tensor networks which would also serve random codes, as well as variations and different types of tilings of this Poincaré disk in ADS space. And this link between quantum error correction of the boundary theory and the ADS space, spatial slices of the ADS space, was also really important, as it led to new and deeper understanding of the map between bulk to boundary operators, how to reconstruct operators living in the gravitational space from the quantities of the quantum system in the boundary. And in addition, they were very important for the derivation of the page curve, recent results with this replica wormholes. And a lot of insights about those results came initially from this error correction picture of holography. And the last very fascinating connection has attracted a lot of research in recent years is a relationship between the complexity of states in the boundary and the volume or action. There's a subtlety, but I think for our purposes, volume will be sufficient. And here on the left, for people who are not familiar, I will just briefly describe one of the most popular diagrams people in this it from qubit community like to draw. It's the Penrose diagram of the two-sided black hole, where is the ball here in the boundary corresponds to the boundary d-dimensional CFT. Then we have additional dimension being born. So there is a d plus one dimensional ABS space, and there are actually two asymptotic ABS spaces the left one here and the right one, and they're connected through a wormhole. So there is a black hole that connects them, that anything falling into the black hole from the left or the right will end up in the singularity. And if one looks at the fixed spatial slices, for example, the maximum volume slice of connecting left and right at the certain time points, T left to right, there would be a connection would be given by this spatial geometry that's known as Einstein-Rosen bridge, or simply called a wormhole. And the connection was proposed by Susskind between the volume of this wormhole. Susskind and collaborators, like Susskind of Stanford, and then other results came about that really like established the link between the volume of this wormhole and the complexity. It's also in a conjecture level, and still like more and more evidence is being collected for this link. And the reason for the complexity was that the wormhole from the semi-classical gravity point of view continues growing for exponentially long times in the entropy of the black hole, that S is the entropy. And the wormhole length, there's no reason for the semi-classical picture to break, but many quantities in the boundary that people knew, such as correlators or like correlations functions or like other like simple physical quantities in the boundary theories that we knew, like they all broke down after certain polynomial times. So no quantity was really tracking this growth for exponential times. So that was kind of a motivational thing, that the complexity was one object that was continued growing for exponentially long time. It was conjectured. And specifically what the conjecture establishes is the relationship between the volume of the wormhole in the appropriate units and the complexity, the gate complexity of the state. What I mean by that is basically if we allow like simple 1 and 2 qubit gate set, and then we ask a question, what is the number of gates, minimal number of gates required to go from the simple state, in this case could be like all zero state, or could be like tensor product of well pairs, and arrive at the desired state, that would be like kind of a relative state complexity that this connection is referring to. In addition to this, like a lot of work, this was a discrete notion of complexity that was based on discretizing the Hilbert space and some existence of circuits, and like really unclear how to carry out or like even prove this relationship in continuous quantum field theories. And Rob Myers and collaborators have done some really interesting work on trying to understand what notions of complexity we can define that is related to the volume in the quantum field theories. And I think there's been a lot of exciting work in this direction in actually like understanding this beyond the circuit, like cartoon pictures of the volume and the circuit length growing. So my one of my papers that I will talk about would actually be closely related to complexity equals volume, or like build upon it. In fact, it will try to answer how this complexity equals volume conjecture carries to evaporating black hole, what it means for the evaporating black hole. And the next part of my talk will focus on this paper of ours. And it has to do with the complexity of evaporating black holes and the Python's launch geometry that hopefully by the end of this part, it'll be clear what I mean by that. All right, so, okay, again, complexity, geometry, connection. And here, just that the relative state complexity of the boundary state appears to be related to the volume of the wormhole. There is a modification of this complexity relating to the action on Willer-DeWitt patch, but I think this is not super relevant for our case. But there are examples and where it becomes relevant. Okay, so this was a relationship about relating geometry to complexity, and it seemed that the volume of the wormholes has to do with the complexity of the quantum state in the boundary. So this was work that like took off on its own, but there was in parallel to this, starting 2013, and later papers came out up to recently by Preskill in 2020 and Kim and Tang, where the authors asked about the actually complexity of decoding Hawking radiation of the black hole. So specific setup is that we create a black hole from infalling matter, and then black hole evaporates, and the radiation is collected. And then after a page time, that when more than half of the black hole has evaporated, the most of the information that fell into the black hole must be decodable, like assuming unitarity of the process. And then this is along the lines of like a Preskill-Hayden construction of the black hole evaporation process and black hole dynamics, that the most of the information should be accessible from the radiation. So we should be able to read the information that fell into the black hole from the radiation. However, there is this sequence of arguments starting from Harlow and Hayden that argue that the decoding of actual infalling mode after the page time from radiation is exponentially hard in the complexity. And this argument relies on some complexity class reduction and some mixing, like general mixing argument of the dynamics of the black hole and radiation modes. And this seems like quite a robust statement. And later on, it was actually made even more robust by Preskill and Isaac and Eugene Tank, and where they actually illustrate that if you collect this radiation and apply low complexity unitaries to decode it, this radiation looks like a random, like a mixed state, meaning that it's pseudo-random state, meaning that it's with a polynomial number of operations is not decodable, the information that fell in. So again, supporting this idea that the decoding complexity of Hawking radiation should be exponential in the entropy. So this was like a apparent contradiction, where on the one side we have a black hole radiating that and the radiation forming, and the whole evolution is taking only exponent, like polynomial in entropy time. So whatever notion of volume or like a volume plus the entanglement we have in mind, it should not exceed the polynomial complexity, but the decoding complexity is exponential. And this was like a kind of confusing, why is it, and is there a way one can really understand deeply the complexity equals volume proposal or modify it to explain this puzzle of evaporating black holes? Yeah, and the solution is actually contains two different important points. Point number one is the specific notion or definition of complexity one uses here. And to distinguish the two, the decoding radiation or the complexity of the entire state or like relative state complexity, we name this complexity with the two different terms, like restricted and unrestricted. So suppose we have systems A and B that are maximally entangled. They could have like product of Bell pairs or could be a random state that is maximally entangled between A and B. And the UAB is the some unitary that acts on systems A and B. So one could say that the complexity of UAB can be defined in terms of all possible small gates that apply to both systems A and B and couple them across A and B. So this is unrestricted complexity, no restrictions on the subsystem you can act on. On the other hand, one could define a restricted complexity where you only allow acting on one subsystem. And this is also possible. It's possible to approximate the unitary UAB with acting only on one subsystem because the initial state was maximally entangled. So approximately, if you have enough n qubits that are maximally entangled to start with up to an order one error, you could actually approximate the unitary by acting only on one side. And the Hawking radiation's question of decoding is really a question about restricted complexity, not an unrestricted complexity. And then in terms of diagrammatic picture, so if you have some coupling going between left and the right and the unitary UAB, the here in this case, like the if these two systems evolution couples them, then undoing this coupling only by restricted complexity on the one side could be really difficult, versus the evolution itself could be pretty small. And this is, I think, what's happening with the Hawking radiation. And this is the distinction between the complexity that one wants to relate, like a joint state, relative state complexity of entire state to the volume of the wormhole. And the second one has to do with the actual decoding complexity that you're only allowed to act on the radiation. So there are examples when these two complexities are the same. And the most simple example is the time evolution of the thermofield double state, where you evolve the two systems without coupling them with the no coupling term. They're independently evolving. And the restricted and unrestricted complexity is exactly the same because it's maximally entangled. You can count the operators between left and right or separately. So I think after this, realizing that thermofield double has restricted and unrestricted complexity, that's the same. And the Hawking radiation, like evaporating black hole, has a wormhole that has a small unrestricted complexity, so small volume, meaning polynomial volume. Then we ask, why is the restricted complexity of evaporating black hole or the radiation, like decoding hard, is the wormhole different from the wormhole one gets for the thermofield double? That's like the famous Einstein-Rosen bridge. So is there any signature in the geometry? This was part two, the question number two, whether geometry knows about this difference between wormholes that have big difference between restricted and non-restricted complexity and the ones that don't. And more specifically, like, here is a cartoon of the evaporating black hole. And like, hopefully by the end of the talk, it will be clear what how we pick this nice Cauchy slice. But the idea is if you have Hawking mode leaving at different times and the wormhole like starts shrinking in the end, so it gets smaller and smaller, the black hole, and the radiation degrees of freedom get more and more, like this wormhole in a sense should be very different from the thermofield double. And how we can quantify that difference using like entropic measures. And here, I mean, wormhole, I understand there's like this bell pair, like the Hawking modes that come out are actually entanglement, but here we, by the wormhole, we will mean a generalized entropic tools that one could use that include the bulk entanglement as well as the area low terms. And then we actually are able to properly define these things. But for now, I think the simple answer is that thermofield double state that has a restricted and unrestricted complexity that are very similar, they're the same actually, has a wormhole that has just single minima of the area or of the entanglement entropy or the minimal area, versus the evaporating black hole has this very funny feature that it has this obstruction in the middle of the wormhole connecting black hole to the boundary. And this obstruction is in the form of this minimum, maximum, minimum bulge sitting in inside the wormhole. And this bulge here is purely like an area piece, but in reality, you can define it when you have bulk entanglement as well. So it is a bulge in the sense of generalized entanglement entropy. So I think that's the our like realization was that this is the bulge that makes the decoding of the Hawking radiation very hard. And we call this bulge Python's lunch, and just because it's it looks like a Python just had a lunch, now okay, so after realizing what's the feature, I would like to argue to you using tensor networks as a toy model why decoding a bulge is hard. And then after that, I'll go back and describe how one would actually detect the bulge in the evaporating black hole. So let's start with a cartoon of tensor network really construct a bulge mathematically and I try to analyze what's the complexity, a restricted complexity of undoing this network. And specifically, we start from some initial qubits going left to right, and then we have some evolution with the unitary tensors here. And then in the part where the wormhole like expands, we will have ancillary qubits in red, like at the state zero. And then we continue it for some like a length of evolution with like unitary evolution. And then we shrink the network back to a smaller size, but size larger than the initial size. And this final shrinking happens with the isometries, which is the same to say that we post-select on some of these legs here in red and end up with a final state. So specifically, if we run a quantum states, psi in as an input, then we have this ML is the number of ancillary qubit we plug in initially. Then we evolve with the unitary of the tensor network. That is some scrambling unitary. I think for our arguments, this needs to be at least like a scrambling length or to be more strong condition, one could require it to be a two design. But something that's polynomial in the number of qubits you evolve it on, and then in the last step we post-select on this last part when we shrink the size of the network. But the number of post-selected legs is less than the number of the ancillary legs. So we are interested in like undoing this network on the larger side. So how would one undo it? So undoing it would require constructing a new unitary, UPL, that we call a unitary of the Python's lunch, that would actually get rid of post-selection, meaning that we could have a unitary, like actually explicitly construct a unitary that would do the same thing, start in the psi in zero ML states, and then end up with the psi out zero MR states, and perform it for any input state psi ins and psi out. So be independent of this input state. So for the generic network that can map the degrees of freedom, we will have to construct the UPL and analyze the complexity, the gate complexity of this UPL unitary. Good. All right. So and the way to do it is to use a Grover search-like protocol. So essentially, let's start with a simpler version of this protocol. And in that case, we have some input state phi. We evolve with the unitary UTN, that's the polynomial complexity in the number of qubits. Then we post-select on some of the legs MR, and we want to replace with this post-selection with the search, a Grover search. And you do it by defining u phi. That's a function that depends on the initial state you start with, and flips the sign of everything orthogonal to the state. And then the v, that's the unitarily sandwiched like a conjugated version of just flipping the sign on the ancillary qubits, MR ancillary qubits, on all the orthogonal states except the target state. And we just simply repeat this sequence L times, and then we have another UTN applied to it. And this will actually perform, like approximate really well the final state and end up replacing post-selection with a unitary PL that will work for a given input state phi. So this protocol will depend on the specific input state details, and it will be a way to decode this tensor network from one side alone if we were restricted to only act on the one side alone. So this protocol is very similar to the construction by Kitaev and Yoshida from 2017, where they analyze the decoding of the post-select or the decoding of the Hawking radiation, and there's a post-selection on the Bell pairs, which is replaced with the Grover-like search. So our construction is slightly different, since we did not want to have the dependence on the state phi, but rather we wanted the protocol to work for arbitrary inputs. And then it turned out actually not much work is necessary in addition to doing a Grover search, but rather we simply flip the sign for the ancillary qubits ML instead of entire state. this would be a unitary U that is independent of psi n, and then do exact same construction of the UPL. And the complexity of this UPL will also be similar to the Grover construction. It would be just simply the square root of 2 to the MR, the number of legs that are post-selected, multiplied with the initial size of the tensor network, or the complexity of the tensor network we started with. And this would work with high probability if the ML is much larger than MR, meaning that the Ancilla qubits number is larger than the number of post-selected legs. And this was actually an interesting realization, because then the protocol will be independent of the state, and you could run backwards arbitrary state. And this is known in literature as oblivious phase amplification, and it's related to this block encoding and amplifying blocks of the matrices in a generic fashion. But I'm not gonna go deep into it, but the basic insight that we came from here, that the complexity to actually doing it on the single side and using the notion of restricted complexity, one ends up with this enhancement factor that one has to undo a post selection that the geometry was doing for you. In this case, the tensor network shrinking, undoing that will require to undo this post selection. All right, and why this Grover search estimates are optimal, or do you think natural question would be would there be a shortcuts? I think for the generic circuits, you know, such as a random circuit of some polynomial depth in number of qubits that it's scrambling regime or two design regime, I think that there is a fairly good complexity class collapse argumentation that you generically cannot come up with the shortcuts, at least not with the shortcuts that will exponentially improve this result. There might be shortcuts that are polynomial, but you cannot really have exponential improvement of this prefactor square root of 2 to the MR, and this is because if you were able to do it for generic random circuits, this would lead to a complexity collapse of post BQP that's equal to PP to BQP. Great. Good. So in terms of how exactly we define this surfaces and number of legs that are post selected for tensor networks, So the two minimas are fairly straightforward. There are minimal cuts, cutting out the minimal number of legs one would need to cut out the left and the right side. And the largest side is the side that you can use to define your restricted complexity. For the maximal, I think we have a proposal to use this minimax prescription, where you look at all possible slicings and pick out the maximal cut and then minimize through all possible slicings. And the conjecture is that the complexity, restricted complexity, will be the size of the network and multiplied with this exponential factor of that is the difference that is exponential in the difference of the largest minima and this the maximum we found with this minimax prescription. Good. All right. Now going back to a black hole case. Here, as I said, we have this nice Cauchy slice that captures kind of physically what's happening. Perhaps not all the details, but it's a nice cartoon. And here we have first Hawking mode coming out, second, third, and so on, and the second side shrinking. And then here, the two minimas that Python's lunch requires will be two different minimal cuts that one can find by using generalized entropy formula. One of the minimas has to do with the cutting only the black hole area. The other one has to do with the cutting only the radiation degrees of freedom. And this can be defined covariantly. It was done since 2012 with by Wall, and then later work was done how to find this two minimas in a covariant fashion. It's known as a maximin prescription, where you go over all possible Cauchy slices, find the minimum, and then maximize over all possible choices of Cauchy slices. And what's new was about finding the maximal cut. That's more tricky. one has to look at two different slicings going from radiation to the black hole and from the black hole to the radiation, and then using the same kind of principles as we use for tensor network, look at all possible slicings, find the maximum and minimize over the slicings. And this actually gives you, yeah, like a covariant way to define this covariant prescription to find the maximal slice. And once you found these three surfaces, you can draw a Cauchy slice that actually has that Python's large features in a generalized entropy. And that's very different from a thermofield double state that has a single minima in the middle. And we are able to actually use this prescription with this like maxi minimax prescription, where you slice and the fine minima and then maximize over all the Cauchy slices. And this is a tractable problem in a JT gravity with the non-interacting fermions. You can actually find these three surfaces. With interacting fermions, I think things are harder, but perhaps with more effort possible to do. But essentially, after we show that the black evaporating black hole has a Python's lunch in its geometry, and that's how it is different from a thermofield double state, we conjecture that the conclusions from the tensor network, this construction of the tensor network, that really the complexity difficulty or enhancement of complexity comes from this exponential factor that goes like the difference of the maximal, like the bulge, the size of the bulge in a Python's lunch, and the largest minima. And that enhancement is in addition to the volume law or unrestricted complexity that's related to the volume of the wormhole. And this conjecture, I think at this level, we have only this tensor network argument, but I think it would be very exciting to explore this in a context of like quantum field theories, and perhaps by modifying like the notion of the complexity one uses, since like the circuit complexity ideas are harder to compute. Good. I think that was like the main punchline of that project. Now I think I'm gonna switch gears and jump into a different topic. And this goes under the title Quantum Gravity in the Lab. Questions? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was, sorry about that. If I can turn my camera on, sorry.
No worries.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Hi. Good. How are you?
I'm surviving the pandemic. It's okay. Yeah. when you were talking about the circuits, it seemed like the restriction ML much greater than MR was just a technical thing. Is that natural from the geometric perspective or the black hole picture?
Yeah, so actually it is natural in a sense that they both scale as the, like around the page time or a bit after page time, like the largest part is they both scale like the entropy, but the difference between the max and the mean, mm-hmm. right? Like it's also, basically it's proportional to the entropy. So for the large end, the difference is sufficiently large for this like independent construction to work. So yeah, I think in the black hole regime, the regime where we care, like all the differences are proportional to n. I think that's very important.
So these are both geometric, and so they're like that difference is an order n squared contribution. Exactly. Yeah, okay.
That's precisely okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so thanks.
In the regime. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's a great question. Thanks.
I have a question as well. So is there any kind of reason from gravity that this should be the case? Like if this decoding is easy, then was there any problem? And also, I guess it's more related to your second topic, but if it's not a random unitary, instead more like a gravitational unitary, then there could be a better way to decode it.
The kind of the claim is that if in the gravity you have a Python's lunch, it is in the form of purely geometric launch or like a launch in a generalized entropy. I think the claim is that if you have that like going up bigger and smaller and the difference like is large and like scales with n, this would give you exponential like in n factor, which would make it hard to decode. I think the claim is that this Python's launch is the feature in the gravity that tells what is easy to decode from one side and what is not.
Yeah, I see. But suppose like for some reason it was not the case from then. Was there any problem in the gravity side? Like looking at the boundary, it looks difficult to decode. But from gravity viewpoint, I don't see any really like.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. So actually there is some follow-up results on this. Why the reason it's hard to go into the launch is that you cannot extend the causal wedge beyond this first minima. There's actually a paper by, I think Netta Engelhard and Jeff that like looked into this. And there is a kind of a reason that tools, like on the gravity side, some of the techniques for like trying to like get into the launch, like using some deformations that can extend the causal wedge, is like there's a barriers basically coming from the presence of the launch.
So you mean causal wedge, not entanglement wedge.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Like,
I see.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, like entanglement wedge is fixed. It's the first minima, right? But the causal wedge that's basically cannot penetrate into the launch area.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of was actually good. It was kind of a evidence suggesting that indeed, like Python's launches like seem to really have introduced barriers to like going into that part of geometry from a single side.
I see. But then if I add like, I mean, I don't know if this is allowed procedure or not, but if I add EPR pairs, then if I increase S min, then the situation would change.
Yeah.
Like I add more like resources to do this.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like you could potentially add some resources and you know, will depend whether like introducing that will actually change your presence of the launch or not. Like if you can get rid of the post-selection or like make less post-selected qubits, then I think you could have an effect on the complexity.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Should I continue to the next one? Not to run too much over time. All right, cool. So the next topic is on the quantum gravity in the lab and the teleportation protocol that was inspired by the traversable wormholes and this appeared in this two papers. Good, so we have a lot of experience like physics community studying questions about gravity or even quantum gravity and simulating some of the aspects of matrix models and asking questions like numerically. And we have used classical computers so far to study those questions, but classical computers are very limited since it's hard to simulate a Hilbert space that's exponentially larger in number of degrees of freedom. And I think with the new era of like quantum devices and quantum technologies being added and more accessible to physics community, I think there's a great chance that like holographic map will be a powerful tool for asking questions about quantum gravity and actually trying to find experimental answers in this quantum platform, such as like Rydberg atom systems or superconducting qubits or trapped ions. And I think this paper was, like, first of all, it was a protocol that was interesting on its own as an information processing like tool, but also there's a chance that this kind of protocols in the near-term future can actually be implemented and executed in quantum devices. And the motivation for this teleportation protocol came from the paper by Gao, Jeffries, and Wall, and later by Maldacena and Stanford, who did the same construction for like SYK and JT gravity, where authors argue that coupling two disconnected CFTs by this very simple coupling between O left and O right matching operators between left and right can actually open up the wormhole just a little bit. So the information can travel from left to the right, and the local like qubit that you insert on the left will appear on the right. And the gravitational argument for this was which was investigated in depth in these papers, was that if you throw in a particle here, like initially, like it just stays and hits the singularity, never exits the black hole. But once you use this coupling create a negative energy shock, which is in our universe is not an easy task to achieve. But in this holographic universe where you can have control of the boundary conformal field theories or the simulations of those field theories, it is actually a reasonable coupling between two systems. Then this would create a negative energy shock in the bulk that, and your like qubit will hit this message, and this negative energy shock will pull it out of the black hole, and it will show up in a given time point in the right set. So information can actually travel through the wormhole, and this protocol will work on in a very like narrow window around the horizon, since this interaction like is kind of opening up the wormhole, but not completely, just a narrow gap, so a certain limited amount of information can travel through. So the goal of our work was to actually understand this from the boundary point of view. Like, what does really mean? I mean, in a naive sense, this protocol is a teleportation scheme in a sense that like we start with the maximally entangled state between left and right sides. I mean, maximally entangled for in thermofield double in general for the fixed temperature. And then we evolve with some Hamiltonian backwards in time. We insert a qubit in some given state. We evolve it forward. And then we couple the left and right. And then we evolve forward the right side. And the information comes out in a local and nice way. And the coupling can be quite generic, like any local operators. You could like couple Paulis, or if you are working on SYK model, like couple two fermionic between operators between left and right. And this is the thermofield double state. And this coupling, actually, one important aspect of this coupling, that it is not a fully quantum coupling, in a sense that it can be implemented as an LOCC operation. That's like local quantum operations and classical communication. Meaning that this interaction between left and right is not like a truly quantum operation that somehow magically pulls out quantum information from the left and moves it to the right, but it's rather a classical, something that can be implemented as a classical communication and the local quantum operations on the left and the right. So it indeed has all the flavors of being a teleportation protocol, but how exactly it is a teleportation protocol and how generic it is it working only for holographic systems or working beyond those systems and for generic like scrambling systems, or what are the conditions needed? And that was kind of a set of like a long set of questions that were like very intriguing. And I think we were able to partially answer those questions. And the number one thing is like, there's a simple trick you could do to use the maximal entanglement between left and right and rewrite this operation in this form. And here we assume that the couplings are Z coupling between left and the right. And the Hamiltonian is could be a random matrix theory, could be some chaotic spin chain, which we studied numerically, or could be an SYK model. And turns out the important feature of this operation is that it implements a so-called size operator. That is an operator that acting on this specific basis, like a size basis, like Pauli basis P, applies a function that only depends on the size of this Pauli operator. And what exactly I mean by that is that, let's go back to the definition of this Pauli basis. So Pauli basis is, so we have side left and right. And for simplicity, we think we're in an infinite temperature limit now, but later it wouldn't matter. But suppose we have maximally entangled Bell pairs and M copies of Bell pairs between left and right. So, and then we can define a full basis by acting on the Pauli string only on one side. So Pauli string on acting on the left side will generate a complete basis for like a left and right system. And the idea was that for the chaotic, generic chaotic systems, such as random matrices or like chaotic spin chain or SYK model, this operator will just implement acting on these phases, will implement will add a phase to each term that will depend via a function of the size of the operator. And here the size of the operator means the non-identity elements in this Pauli. Good. So it will act with the power with the size operators, and that's why the name teleportation by size. And in this infinite temperature limit, where we have a maximally entangled state between systems left and right, this protocol is able to teleport a single qubit with a perfect fidelity for all the times after a scrambling time. So essentially, like in the beginning, when e to the iht is identity, there is no teleportation. But once the system scrambles, which in SYK could be logarithmic in the entropy, but in the case of the random matrices, it could be order one time. Like this system will teleport with a perfect fidelity and teleport it from that point on with a perfect fidelity. And that's like the first regime of the teleportation regime that is very generic. And the only constraint needed is that your dynamics be a scrambling dynamics. In addition to this regime of teleporting a single qubit, there is a regime that's much harder to study rigorously, but is much more interesting because it seems to be really connected to the existence of the holographic dual of your many-body system. Specifically, this regime works in the low temperatures and can teleport more than single qubit. In fact, we think it will teleport like a fraction of the total entropy of the initial entangled state. But these parts are much harder to study rigorously in terms of fidelity, but one could study it in terms of like looking at various correlators and how they're connected. And more specifically, like in a diagrammatic way, if we would illustrate that for the systems that have holographic duals, such as SYK model, there is a peak in the middle that at around the like a window around the scrambling time when the capacity will be much larger than a single qubit of teleportation. And then after this peak is over, it will go back to in a regular scrambling regime where it teleports only single qubit. And to really investigate this teleportation, one has to understand the how the operators grow and how operators evolved in time in these holographic models which are in a thermal state. And more specifically, the object of interest is this like operator OT multiplied with the square root of a density matrix. And expanding this into a basis of a simple operators. And that's why K actually here P would be like various Majorana fermion, like some of Majorana fermions, and then with their appropriate weights, which would be like complex numbers that will evolve in time. And the object of interest would be the summing the squares of these quantities. And then it turns out they all change for the given value of the size of the operators, like L, which is like L is basically like we sum over all possible strings with a given weight. It could be the Pauli strings for like random circuit models, or like could be for SYK, could be like Majorana fermions. And then turns out they all will like evolve the same phase factor. And the second part will be the distribution in the actual distribution of the length, right? Different like size operators. And it turns out that the interesting regime of holography that gives this capacity enhancement has to do with this phase winding linearly with the size of the operators. So the ways around the scrambling time when this enhancement is noticed, like one can actually study the phase, and turns out this linear phase is the thing that really gives the enhancement of the capacity of teleportation. And this is only place that this like rigorously is possible to study is the SYK model. And it's a model of Majorana fermions with the random like 4-point couplings with the Gaussian random coupling parameter. There is like a notion of duality between JT gravity and the SYK model. There's subtle issues in fully understanding this duality. But one interesting connection is that the momentum of the infalling particle is related to the size of the operator. And using this connection, one could actually understand the teleportation as in a very simple terms as phases acting on this like a basis of the Paulis, and the phases that only depend on the size of the Paulis. And more specifically, if we like evolve from the left side and in the finite temperature regime, like one could compute for SYK that indeed the phases evolve linearly with the size of the Pauli operators. And then the coupling, the simple coupling also adds a phase, but then these two adding to each other will be identical to evolving backwards from the right side. And that's really like truly the duality between the evolution of the operator from the left and the coupling is equivalent to the acting on the right side. And this work is very closely related to a work by Schuster and collaborators, and I think Benny was also involved, where they study this peaked size teleportation. They use a different term, but I think like a lot of insights are very similar. And the idea is that this teleportation protocol, or like using like the capacity of this teleportation protocol, is very closely connected to the presence and of the holographic dual. In fact, these phases, like in SYK, they are quite challenging to compute these phases in pure SYK, that this is really the evolution of the operators. However, in the gravity, this picture is extremely simple. And if, from the momentum size correspondence, this is simply a particle traveling and the wave function evolving with e to the ixp, where p is the momentum. And the momentum p is the same as the size of the operator p. And this is essentially like in the presence of the gravity in the gravitational physics, this evolution and the teleportation is somewhat obvious in how this happens. And the only challenging part is to understand that this coupling also adds a simple phase, which like undoes the evolution phase. But in the context of the holographic theories, it's not obvious from the boundary of point of view. And some models, like one might not even able to be show this linearly winding, size winding phenomenon. And experiment might be only way to actually test this. And I think to that note, I think like there is a really exciting possibilities in the future to investigate this phenomena, or like carry out this experiments in the laboratory using superconducting qubits or like Rydberg atoms or trapped ions. And in our paper, we also discussed some of these possibilities. And specifically here, I wrote down some of the unitaries one would try to do in a Rydberg atom model to actually measure this teleportation. And it could be measuring simply the simple notion, a single qubit, or looking at this high capacity regime where gravity duals are present. I think both would be interesting experiments to do. And all right, I'm close to the end. So I think I'm going to quickly summarize. So my research actually Falls like tries to answer like up until now and looking into the future answers two main questions. Like one is what can we learn about quantum gravity through holography using the tools and methods of quantum information? And I talked to about the specific examples of the complexity equals volume and our proposal to apply to evaporating black hole and the role of the Python's launch features in the geometry for the restricted complexity. I also have worked on the holographic complexity in JT gravity and the computed like onset of spectral form factor using like random quantum circuits. And all of these results are like using tools and techniques of quantum information to try to understand some of the puzzling features of quantum gravity and holography. And looking into the future, like I think just more examples of Python launches that we haven't seen. And I think they all like worth being investigated. And the other direction I think that's really relevant is like applying this, like trying to really test this conjecture in the context of quantum field theories beyond the circuit models, perhaps with an alternative definition of complexity. And then the next question that I pursued is during my like postdoc and during PhD and looking into the future is what are the interesting like deep questions in quantum gravity that we can answer using the near-term quantum technologies and quantum devices that will be available in the near like future? And this goes under the umbrella of quantum gravity in the lab. And this includes like teleportation by size protocol, phenomena of size winding, and another project that I'm very excited like continuing thinking about is simulating matrix quantum mechanics that's like BFSS or BMN models on a quantum computer. Obviously, this will require like thousands of qubits, but looking into the future, this is the much viable avenue to, in my view, than actually achieving like Planck scale physics in accelerator and like probing string theory in accelerator. Obviously, it will rely on holography as a kind of translator language, but I think there's still a lot of interesting questions we can pose. And to that note, like I think understanding connection between size winding and maximal chaos is really like interesting near-term question. Like I am currently working on a teleportation protocol with a GHZ-like entangled states, and just generally thinking about more like protocols and observables that are inspired by quantum gravity, but have very clear interpretations and clear like constructions in the quantum experiments that we can really carry out. And yeah, with that. I think I would like to finish my talk. So it has been a great fun giving the talk. And if you guys have any questions, I think some of the people had to leave. I'm happy to answer the questions or have a continuous discussion. I'm very intrigued and inspired by the great research at Perimeter Institute. And I would like to meet a lot of the members of quantum information and quantum gravity communities and visit in the future more and have more discussions. Thanks.
Great, thanks a lot, Grant, for a really interesting talk. We already had some questions during the talk. Maybe you have a few more. I see Rob's unmuted. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let me see. It's in the chat or should I?
No, can I just, thanks very much for the very nice talk, and I hope we'll be past the pandemic and we can get you to come up here and visit in person. That'd be wonderful. I was wondering in your teleportation or your quantum gravity in the lab part, mm-hmm. Originally you were talking about chaotic systems, and then on the one slide where you were talking about experimental realizations, it seemed like you were going to a Floquet system, and I was just wondering if you could comment on that. What happened? Like, is that somehow?
Oh yeah.
Doing the same.
Yeah, job? Actually, yeah. So I was telling that there are two regimes basically. One is this very like simple notion of like single qubit teleportation. That's very mm-hmm. generic. That you don't mm-hmm. need to have a holographic dual. The only requirement is a scrambling system. And in the Floquet models, you can really have scrambling dynamics. can actually have a scrambling dynamics, and that's exactly what the proposal is, to use this Rydberg-Adams systems to build a scrambling dynamics and actually observe the single qubit teleportation experimentally. In terms of creating thermofield double and order like running SYK-like systems, I don't know how to do it in this flow K-like setups, but you know, maybe it's worth thinking about that too, because I think it's interesting. Maybe the interesting thing could be come up with a flow K model that will have size winding and try to argue whether there is any notion of holography, because size winding is a very obscure thing in the quantum information language, but it's a very simple picture of the particle momentum duality and particle falling into the black hole. And once you see that size winding, I think that that's another, but like I have done zero work on that, so I don't want to make any claims there.
I see. But it also seemed like, I thought, maybe I misunderstood, but you said that introducing the coupling in the gravity, you know, was introducing this extra momentum phase. But I thought you were saying that was hard to understand from the gravity side.
Oh, no, no. Actually, this part was not super hard, but was understood, right? That was the part of the negative energy. It wasn't like nothing crazy, but it was like the observation by Jeffries Gao that like, this simple thing just creates a negative energy shock.
Right.
In the circuit side, it's very simple, like a phase being, like if you work in this basis, like it's a fairly straightforward like operation, on the boundary side.
Okay. No, well, thanks for the very nice talk. Thanks. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Thank you. It was a great question. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I'm having trouble finding the questions. Are they like in the chat, or maybe people should just?
I just want to say thanks for the talk, Grant. I think we're talking tomorrow, so I don't think I need to ask you too much right now. But just wanted to pop in and say hi. It was a really nice talk.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Yeah, I gotta go. Look forward to chatting tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. See you tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, well, I think that's probably it for the questions. So let's all thank Grant one last time for a really nice talk.
Yeah, thanks for organizing.